Thank you.
Take care of me.
I will.
Okay. So we're going to entertain public comment, and these public comments should be directly aimed, please, at the timeline associated with the rulemaking, the validation pilot, and any other things that you think the board should consider as they move forward in the water typing process. So, first up, Steve Barnemeyer and Ken Miller. You want to come up with him?
My name is Steve Barnemeyer, and along with Ken Miller, I represent small forest landowners and the Washington Farm Forestry Association on the TFW Policy Committee. It is also my distinct honor and privilege to represent small forest landowners and work with DNR staff and other TFW caucuses to prepare the draft rule language for the permanent water typing rule, as well as develop the field protocol guidelines for water typing within Board 9023. Today, I would like to ask you for your continued affirmative support for a project within the SEMR Master Project Schedule that is associated with the proposed permanent water typing rule and that is critically important to small forest landowners across the state of Washington. The project is the LIDAR-based water typing model physical study design combined project. You'll see it when you get to SEMR later.
So, Steve, we'll have a public comment period.
I know, but this is primarily about the water typing. It's in the context of that. I understand that it could have gone either way. See, the project will, one, specifically prepare a study design to evaluate and recommend appropriate default physical criteria to accurately and consistently identify the upstream extent of fish habitat, and two, specifically prepare a study design to develop a LIDAR-based logistic regression model that accurately predicts fish habitat across non-federal forest lands in Washington and avoid systematic bias. Washington Farm Forestry Association strongly supports the efforts of the Forest Practice Board associated with the Fish Habitat Assessment Methodology, FHAM, component of the permanent rulemaking process. But very few small private landowners, forest landowners, currently utilize electrofishing protocol surveys for the purposes of submitting forest practice applications. And very few small forest landowners are likely to in the future. Most small forest landowners utilize the current default physical criteria to identify the upper extent of fish habitat for the streams on their ownership. They would readily use a regulatory fish habitat model if such a model were available that meets the requirements of the Forest and Fish Agreement. Highly accurate, minimizes error, and reduces systematic bias and is consistently implementable. The current default physical criteria have never been validated as meeting these same requirements. With over 40% of all private timberland in the state of Washington owned by small private landowners, it is critically important that this project is completed in order to provide small forest landowners with simple tools that accurately and consistently identify the upstream extent of fish habitat with having to perform electrofishing surveys. So much of the discussion so far has been about validation model for FHAM. What we're saying is small forest landowners very rarely utilize FHAM, and so we need to, within the rule package, within the context of studies coming out of the SEMR program, still be working on projects that help small forest landowners with the tools they need. So thank you for the opportunity to provide input to you about a project critically important to small forest landowners and the accuracy and consistency of this permanent water typing system.
And Steve, just to clarify, you're talking about continuing the work that was started like last year on a LIDAR-based stream typing model?
The Michelle pilot that was done for with Luke Rogers and a group of people.
Right.
But included in that, they lumped that study together with looking at the applicability or appropriateness of the current default physical criteria and maybe updating.
Okay, along with the physicals. Okay.
Thank you.
Ben?
Good morning, Chairman Bernath and members of the board. Unlike Steve, I'm probably the least qualified to be giving specific advice on water typing and PHB validation, but I do want you to be successful, so I'm offering what I can. I don't understand all the nuances of this decades-old debate, but I believe I do have a grasp of the major problems and perhaps a more fruitful pathway, a pathway that could help reinvigorate the adaptive management program. So what I've been hearing over the last several years leads me to believe the following things. The debate is not about fish or fish habitat. It's about trees, or specifically how big the buffer should be, not whether or not potential fish habitat should be protected. Everyone agrees that fish and fish habitat should be protected. It's quite likely that the upper reaches of these smallish streams being debated for wider buffers for fish habitat will already have NP buffers, 50-foot buffers, very likely adequate for these small perennial streams. Setting precise rules related to variable natural processes such as fish habitat definitions is likely fraught with error and complex distinctions without any meaningful difference or benefit to fish that may or may not use this water sometime in the future. If this issue isn't resolvable by the practitioners, who seem to get along a lot better than the policy folks, why do we think this is resolvable by the rest of us here in Lindsay? Is it possible the only thing wrong with the current rule is the word interim? I.e., if it's not broke, don't fix it. Maybe option one really is the option we should be looking at. You're about to approve spending a couple $1 million that we don't have to do a validation study in what I believe is a false belief that science will provide more answers than questions and will lead to consensus in policy. I hope I'm wrong, but the past seems to suggest that after spending millions of dollars and thousands more hours at work, today's conflict will still be there 3 years from now. The complexity and intractable nature of this issue cries out for a negotiated settlement that respects all of the goals of forest and fish. I believe forest folks truly committed to the win-win principles of forest and fish should be able to find ways to satisfy those folks wanting even wider buffers on perennial or potential fish habitat and do so without requiring more leave trees. For example, when moving from fish to non-fish buffers could be done gradually by tapering it or use of variable widths in these upper reaches, easily extending buffers without sacrificing more timber. Imagine what such a win-win negotiated agreement would or could do to help us get back to the original spirit of TFW, forest and fish. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ken. I'm going to call up a panel. Jenny Knoth, Kevin Godbu, and Karen Twilliger, please. We have a third chair we can put up at the table.
I have the biggest computer, so I'm going to
Go ahead and get started, Jen.
Good morning, Chairman Bernath and members of the Forest Practices Board. My name is Jenny Knoth, and I'm the Director of Environmental Affairs for the Green Crow Company. It's a family-owned timber company in Port Angeles, Washington. Yesterday, Commissioner Friends stressed that science is the foundation of our policy decision-making in her opening remarks at the CEMER Science Conference. We were lucky to have her there. Last year, at this very same Forest Practices Board meeting on May 9, I gave a comment, and this is why I read. what I was going to say is I did give a comment, and I read it, and it's very much appropriate for today as well. So some of this that I'm going to say, I'm going to go ahead and read, because I feel like it's the same. But what I was trying to highlight is that we were recognized for our accomplishments with RMAP. And we're still really proud that we were able to finish. We opened up lots of miles of fish habitat, and we're happy to see this effort improve, you know, hopefully the fish populations. We're getting a little bit concerned around the office that we're starting to see a moving regulatory target. So my concern remains that all of our efforts are going to be undermined by an artificial rush to produce a new change in a rule. There has been no evidence presented that the current rule requires change. I remain positive that this process will follow the science. Remember that the political compromise is already in the 30-year-old timber, fish, and wildlife agreements, and the subsequent forest and fish report, which rely on stakeholder commitment to considering both biological and economic impact. We need to address the biological impact of these rules. They've been in place for 18 years. We do spend a lot of time and money measuring the abiotic factors. A little bit of effort could be placed on the so what. So how does the biology respond to these efforts? We understand this process is rough and it may seem without end, but we're patient. And in the meantime, we continue to work well with our regional forest practice foresters and local stakeholders using our current protocols. We, like many landowners, embrace our role in sustainability, growing and harvesting timber. Wood products are good for Washington. They're durable, renewable. They have clear environmental and social and economic benefits. We make land management decisions based on science. We would like this process to make those decisions based on science. So let's go ahead and take the time it takes to get it right and follow the science. Thank you for your consideration, your time, and dealing with my stuttering.
Thanks, Jenny.
Good morning, Chairman Bernath, members of the board. My name is Kevin Godfrey. I'm with the Weyerhaeuser Company. I want to acknowledge DNR staff and other stakeholders that have heard the cries or pleas from the landowners and others to sort of slow the process down. We think it's very reasonable for the board to modify the rulemaking schedule to reflect the real and more accurate timeline. This is really difficult. Staff at Weyerhaeuser are spending 35% to 50% of their time just trying to keep up with the process, and it's been a pace like this for about a year or so. And I'm not saying we need a break, you know, we're built for this kind of stuff, but when we have these quick turnarounds and we have to get, you know, really hard technical information prepared, data summarized, brought back, we do our best, but a little bit of extra time seems kind of like the smart thing to do, because when we get pushed, we all make mistakes and people get a little prickly and things kind of go off the rail. So I think you're being pretty reasonable by thinking about a different timeline. And I'll just think about it, bring up a couple more comments and then stop talking. But Mr. Engel today talked about the reason we're here, which was the 2013 issues that were surfaced around electrofishing. This board last year in April 17 accepted proposals from many stakeholders about how to modify and do some better techniques around electrofishing. And I think it'd be reasonable for us to sort of tune that up for this year or next year as we think about going forward, to make sure we're doing some workshops and that those issues are addressed, so that, you know, we aren't just kind of continuing to just, you know, play the clock, if you will. I'd also remind you that ultimately we're trying to get a statewide map. And if you think about where we've been, in 1997, the original emergency rule, which forms the basis for the current rulemaking, was adopted. We've been doing this now for 20 plus years. And if you think about it, 60 to 70% of the state is probably already mapped. And so what we're talking about here in this current process is how do we finish it out? And I think as you go through your deliberations, it's quite fine to consider going with the status quo in terms of, yes, we may have these different alternatives, yes, we want to look at PHBs, but when you kind of do the analysis in terms of not only what is different going forward, I think you have to give considerable weight to the fact that in many regions, maybe most of the state is already mapped. I know from my company's perspective, most of our main stems are mapped, and now we're just kind of up into the laterals. And so the implications going forward are probably not as significant as people think, because realistically, we've got 20 years, we've got a 50-year HCP, we've been at this as stakeholders for a long time, and I think we're all quite capable of coming up with reasonable measures. And I'll just close out by saying, we think it's important that we continue with the stakeholder review process. The hybrid that's been discussed here is okay. It doesn't fit our normal way of operating. And again, you know, it's more important to be over-inclusive in this process, because people may not, you know, if they don't feel like they're being heard, they'll find other forums. And I think we've been pretty good in this TFW arena and on this particular issue for trying to, you know, keep it within the family, if you will. And I think we need to continue to strive kind of in that way. So I support your motion today to work towards, you know, a timeline that is reasonable. And I think we really do need to continue to focus on a consensus type decision. This is too important to wind up with a split vote. So I appreciate the opportunity to talk today.
Thank you. Karen?
Good morning, Chair Bernath and members of the Forest Practices Board. For the record, my name is Karen Terwilliger. I'm the Senior Forester at the Washington Forest Protection Association. And first, I'd like to start by thanking the staff in bringing forward the recommendations that they have, recognizing the intense work that's been done by a lot of people around the state on this issue for the last year or so. Mr. Godwin talks a lot about 35 to 50% of some people's time being spent on that. I would say it's a lot higher for me and my staff. WFPA and our member companies have actively participated in the current efforts that are related to the development of the draft rule language, draft board manual language, and board manual field testing. In fact, two of our member companies are actually hosting that field testing. WFPA also supports the following. First, cancellation of the Special Forest Practices Board meeting that's scheduled for June 28th of this year. Second, delay in presentation and approval of a draft rule package until appropriate information is presented for decision making. This information is absolutely critical for a legally durable rule. And I think the reason that the staff has asked for additional time to bring information forward is that the board has to have information, scientific data and information, to make a decision. We also support continued field testing of PHB options, and I had not realized that Mr. Engel was going to talk about field testing for next season as well, beginning in March, but I think that's a fantastic idea. The next item, implementation of the PHB validation study and pilot moving forward, but only after an appropriate technical stakeholder review and comment process is established, and that the pilot clearly provides information relevant to rulemaking decisions. There was a little discussion earlier today about the stakeholder process and how it's different from the normal CEMA process involved. Well, the stakeholders had less than 1 week to absorb and read, review, and comment on the validation study going forward. And that's both the pilot component as well as the study itself. And so that does not seem to me to be an adequate review period. There were reviewers that were not able to do that because their time frame and their workload did not allow for that. We would suggest ensuring that technical stakeholder experts actually be involved in a significant review process. Our scientists put forward several very significant problems that we see with the study design, and those need to be addressed. The next item is development of an adequate spatial analysis to support the rulemaking requirements. As you heard from Mr. Engel, this is absolutely important to determining additional costs for buffers and fish passage projects. It's also important in terms of identifying the benefit side. To date, we have asked repeatedly for a written understanding and an analytical plan about how the spatial analysis will go forward, and we have not received that. You heard earlier today about issues with the data. We also are very concerned about the way that the process may be moving forward, and we believe that the Fish Habitat Technical Group, as well as members of ISAG, should be involved with their expertise in understanding how this spatial analysis goes forward. Again, the reasons that these are all important elements is that you need the analysis to determine how you're going to be able to make a decision among those options. The forest and fish and HCP objectives for water typing system are very clear. It needs to be a highly accurate system and balance the remaining risk allocation. The best place that the most clearly stated that this is in the BIOPS for both federal services. And they state, failure to correctly identify fish-bearing waters will occur, and it's assumed to lessen over time. It is assumed that any methods, and that says any methods, used to map or delineate such waters will have an approximately equal probability of identifying waters as fish-bearing where fish do not actually occur, or the reverse, identifying waters as non-fish-bearing where fish actually do occur. It is further assumed that such errors will be relatively small and largely offset at the landscape level. This assumption is based upon the fact that this concept of equal error probabilities was inherent to the FP Forest Practices HCP. Unlike other land uses, forest practices applicants must verify water typing in their application. This rulemaking process is a clarification of a field verification method, not a renegotiation of the water typing objectives. And as Ms. Knoff mentioned earlier, no data has been brought forward to this point to indicate that the current system does not protect fish or fish habitat. The Administrative Procedure Act assessment includes costs, benefits, impact to small businesses, and then after considering alternative versions of the rule, these analyses, that the rule being adopted is the least burdensome alternative that meets the objectives. And although the validation study design and pilot is not in front of you, a special note is the reference to the uppermost fish generally being cutthroat trout in our state. About 90%, as I recall, from the validation study. WFPA reminds the board that to date, the federal services have declined to list cutthroat trout under the Endangered Species Act. And the protections that we're providing to those cutthroat trout are very important. We are committed to supporting the completion of the supplemental analyses, including an appropriate spatial analysis of potential PHB alternatives, and including a multi-stakeholder representation of our technical staff and oversight to more clearly refine and develop a recommendation that includes these specific PHBs. Again, thank you for your time, and I appreciate the effort that you put into this process, and I'm available for questions if you have any.
Thank you. Next panel, Chris Mendoza, Jamie Glasgow, and Peter Goldman.
Thank you, Board Chair. Jenny, I got to read off this thing. Got my glasses. Thanks again for the opportunity to provide public testimony today. For the record, my name is Chris Mendoza. I'm the board's appointed ZEMA member for the Conservation Caucus. And today I'm going to speak to the PHB validation study. First of all, I'd like to say we appreciate the work done by the board's expert panel in developing the validation study design. As a ZEMA member, going through a study design process can be an arduous task. When we develop study designs using our protocols and standards manual, it involves a project scoping phase, best available science literature synthesis, and a preferred alternatives analysis preceding the development of the study design that later goes through ISPR. One of the reasons we do this is because, as Board Davies pointed out, under the depth manager stakeholders have a hand in every step of the way, and you get a lot of buy-in when you do that, which is why our system's structured that way. It's referred to in the depth manager board manual 22 and the protocols and standards manuals. so I won't bore you with the details of that process, but it, CMR does have a way of doing business. Having said that, I wanted to basically, again, speak to the authors and their good intentions and reasons for developing the study design. However, I want to make it clear that based on my interpretation of the protocol standards in the Section 22, that CMR is not reviewing this. Howard said otherwise up here, but if you look at the way we're structured, SAGs don't work independently of CMR. They're a part of it. So to date, the board can do whatever they want, of course, we all work for you, but we haven't had a hybrid approach where that happens. Also, the board can do work outside of CMR, as you often do. I think that there were some valid reasons raised for why certain work that the board conducts is not tossed into CMR's lap. One of them can be expediency, I think, was one of the reasons raised. However, doing that, again, may not incur the same level of support that otherwise would be under a more formal process. So just to make the board aware that there are different ways about generating information, but there are pros and cons to both. Having said that, I wanted to just speak briefly to the validation study because I did review it as a stakeholder, not as a CMR member, of course, because I haven't been there yet. And there were several fatal flaws, but I'm going to focus on one, and that is the sampling strategy. And right now there's a proposal to stratify by ecoregions. And based on some of the work, well, four specific studies that CMR has done, we've not basically found any significant differences using that strategy. We've done a forest hydrology study. We've done a type N demarcation study, which prompted the board to eliminate the basin area defaults, by the way. We've also done the fish habitat validation study, which was the model. And we've yet to really see that sort of coarse level of stratification work for us. I think that while there's good intentions behind it, it's going to be very costly, as some of you noted. The PHB validation study also notes that if you sample less, you may not be able to stratify as fine, but you may be able to get more bang for your buck. And right now, the validation study, or the rules are split between Eastern and Western Washington. And if you keep the sampling at that level, you could significantly reduce the costs, rather than presuming that you're going to find a relationship between ecoregions. That's particularly important considering the CMR budget, which is also on a level for discussion today. That this project, at its current price tag, is competing against other CMR projects, as you know, in the next biennium, that where we have limited funds. So that is something to consider when the PHB validation study comes back. And then finally, just as a note, that we heard that about the peer review process was going on now with the validation study, and the stakeholder comments are going to be addressed later also. That's sort of upside down, if you will. In other words, usually the stakeholder comments are incorporated into the validation study prior to it going to ISPR. Otherwise, it's sort of a moot point if the ISPR weighs in and then you come back later and weigh in on people's comments. Chances are those comments, if they go against ISPR, will not be addressed. So my point being, there is a process. The board can choose which process to follow, but I just want to make it clear that we've never done a hybrid before. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Jamie.
Good morning, Chair Burnett, members of the board. Thanks for your time this morning. My name is Jamie Glasgow. I am representing the Conservation Caucus as well. I was just sitting here thinking that as it seems that DNR is suffering from over-optimism in their scheduling. I seem to have less and less optimism, and I haven't been at this as long as most of you. We're overdue for a permanent rule. It's disappointing to learn of the delay, but we do hope that the process and the delay will result in an improved end result, which will mean better protection and identification of fish habitat, as is defined in rule. I would, as Chair Burnett foreshadowed, I would like to talk about what to do in the meantime, what is going to happen on the ground in the field in 2019, now that we have a delay in the process. The protocol water typing survey described in current interim rule and board manual can underrepresent the upstream extent of fish habitat, because it provides that habitats where fish were not observed on the day of the survey are type N. It fails to reliably identify fish habitat as defined in WAG, which can include accessible stream reaches that may be unoccupied or even dry at the time of the survey. It fails to accommodate the continuing legacy of past forestry impacts on streams, depressed fish populations, annual and seasonal variability in headwater fish distribution, single pass electrofishing deficiencies, and widespread barrier culverts and temporary natural barriers that restrict present day fish distribution. The board has recognized this and has authorized development of a permanent rule that relies less on electrofishing. The state has committed substantial resources over the past several years to retire the interim water typing rule and replace it with a permanent rule that more reliably describes the extent of type F as defined in rule and as committed to in the HCP. All the while, though, water typing has continued under the interim rule. Indications are that water type modification form submissions for permanent modifications to the regulatory maps have increased as we approach a permanent rule that better defines the extent of type F, which was originally planned for 2018, and then 2019, and now 2020. As we learned at the science conference yesterday, CMER research on type N buffer ineffectiveness in meeting Clean Water Act standards underscores the importance of accurate water typing. At-risk fish populations that were to be protected under the HCP should not be subjected to another year of status quo interim water typing during the field season of 2019. For these reasons, we respectfully request that the board consider an alternate approach to status quo interim rule water typing in 2019. We believe that the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the tribes, the state's fishery co-managers and habitat experts, should develop a draft of this approach for public review and comment before adoption at the August board meeting. Status quo water typing should not be an option in 2019. Thank you.
Thank you, Jamie. Peter.
Good morning, board and board chair. I'm Peter Goldman, and I'm the director of the Washington Forest Law Center, working with and representing the Conservation Caucus. I'd like to make 2 points. One is our caucus's extreme frustration with the delay, obstruction, and the overprocessing of what should be a very relatively simple but very, very, very important step along our trajectory for the next 50 years in this HCP. And second, I want to make a plea to mirror what Jamie just said, for this board to direct some type of interim protection for the 2019 e-fishing season, for the fish type water typing season. I've been at this for 22 years, and I've rarely seen this process bogged down like this. When the Forest and Fish Report was signed in 1999, I remember very distinctly having a conversation with one of the most esteemed people I've ever met in my life, Billy Frank. And I said to Billy, several of us said to Billy, like, this is a 50-year deal. We don't know a lot of answers. We have a lot of blanks. What assurance are we going to have that these are going to happen? How is it that we're going to surrender 50 years of Endangered Species Act, Clean Water Act compliance to something that's subject to a process that's governed by a state board, that's governed by politics, that's governed by all of these factors, economic considerations and all these things? How is this not going to have a glass ceiling on it? And Billy said it won't, because we're going to be there every step of the way, and we're going to hold their feet to the fire. We're going to do it. You have to trust us. Bob Turner, who worked for NOAA Fisheries at the time, we spoke to him, and he said, "Well, what about, you know, how's this going to work? What about no surprises? I mean, there are no surprises in salmon country." It's what we heard. Two people expressed a lot of confidence that this program was going to work and was going to fix these rules over time, or refine them, not fix, but just basically fill in the blanks. For 13 years, we've been proceeding under in this system right now, the system that really just evaluates fish occupancy to where it is today as opposed to potential fish habitat as promised by the rule itself. There's no lack of invigoration of principles. There's no lack of science. We've spent millions. We're on TVW. I want the taxpayers to know that we have spent millions of dollars studying what should have been done a long time ago. This is frankly embarrassing use of state money. For us that we can't figure out because we're captive to a consensus process where some are not trying to achieve consensus, and some are delaying, some are obstructing. We are wasting taxpayer money to do something that this board should take responsibility for and do itself. And that's just not acceptable. This CMER is a $4 million program. That's three times more than the Puget Sound Partnership gets for trying to restore Puget Sound. We're spending millions of dollars, and God, everybody in this room knows how many hours goes into this, and we can't even agree on a way to refine the water typing system a little bit better than the e-fishing method we've been using by board manual. It's mind-boggling. It's not acceptable. We've had the expert panel. We had the FAM process. We've had, you know, hundreds of hours in numerous cities discussing potential compromises. We've left our weapons of war. We haven't gone to court. We haven't filed petitions for rulemaking. We haven't challenged the rule. We haven't done any of that. We've been going to meetings for 12 years to just try to make some improvements. And what do we get? Another year. Well, doing nothing is just simply not going to be an option. Right now, we have a rule that defines fish habitat, and we don't have a water typing system that gets us there. That's a problem. That's really a problem. Right now, we have a rule that basically delegates all of water typing to a board manual in a non-regulatory way. That's a problem. And I quite frankly find it kind of amusing that some folks are saying, well, we can't even do a board manual when our rule delegates to a board manual right now. And a board manual is DNR's responsibility to recommend to this board what it ought to be and adopt the board manual. So even the board manual is too much. It's not even, in some folks' view, enforceable. I mean, we have a problem there. We also have a federal habitat conservation plan on which the ESA and Clean Water Act assurances rely. And if this process cannot work, then there's a problem biologically. There's going to be a problem for all the studies coming down the road. And we're going to go through this on every single study on that matrix? Is every one of these going to take 13 years to implement? We're not supposed to be going back and, you know, reconsidering a lot of the same things. We are supposed to just fill in the blanks, follow the science, and not be externally reconsidering the HCP at every juncture of the way. So the status quo is unacceptable to our caucus, and we urge some kind of interim measure. And I'm wrapping up. The interim, we think there's a lot of room for an interim measure for next field season. We have a Lenny memo out there. Why not a Lenny memo version 2? We have a board manual out there that can be changed by this board at DNR's direction. Why not reinvigorate that? We given a lot already. Mr. Godbooth stood up here and said, folks, we already have all our fish points out there anyway. So really, we're not talking about that much more. Well, oh really? But then why are we delaying for another year if there's not that much more? And probably more important, that was a big give. We're grandfathering in all those points right now. We're basically saying whatever you got out there on paper, they're gonna be good forever. So what's gonna happen, folks, is what we're gonna see is a huge uptick in water type mod forms over the next year. There's gonna be a massive pile to the top of this building. And they're all going to come in because everybody knows that something's going to change. So we're going to get all those watertight mod forms, we're going to get them all changed, and then what's going to happen is when we finally get around to doing something, guess what? Everything's already been typed, grandfathered in, and maybe even logged. So that's where we're headed. That's where we're headed here. We're buying time, and this is bad faith. This is bad faith. We've seen behavior going outside of this process, making promises, making threats. We've been at this process, and we haven't been making promises and threats outside of this process. This is not the way the process was supposed to work. And we are not going to surrender 50 more, 37 years or whatever is left to a process we can't trust. So we need to do something for next field season. If we could do it voluntarily, great. That's what I'm urging. Or we are bringing our weapons to war. We're coming back. And that's what we're going to do, because we're not going to let the Endangered Species Act be hijacked by a process that is not running well and is being obstructed and manipulated. Thank you.
Thank you. Last two, Ray Hans and Jim Peters, please.
Chairman Bernath and members of the board, thank you for this opportunity to talk. I'm Ray Anson with the Kalispell Tribe and representing the Yukut tribes today and the Kalispell Tribe. And a lot of points that I had were already made. I won't belabor those, but I'll leave you with four concepts, four words that I think embellish where we're at and are important to think about as you move forward. That's trust. That's just delay, status quo, and fear. Trust means a lot to us, represent tribal country. That word takes on a lot of meaning in all of its different definitions. Trust of people, trust of process. But the most important is the trust to the sovereigns that occupy territory within this state, and that rely upon these rules to protect the resources that are important to us. Unfortunately, I can't sit here today and tell you that salmon are important to the Upper Columbia because they were ripped from us 70 years ago. And those resources are no longer available to us. As hard as we are going to work to restore them, and we will, they don't belong, they aren't there. We don't have an opportunity anymore. So we're left with resident fish and resident fish species, and they occupy habitats that are being systematically disregarded, and I guarantee it. Your water type modification program, as it's done now, fails. Our comments are not taken into consideration. Our comments are being ignored, and your concurrence is failing to protect fish habitat. If we continue down this path, if we don't have some way to protect fish habitat in this interim period as we delay, as we protect the status quo, we need to protect fish habitat that's being disregarded. You've heard from us about process, you've heard from us about improvement. These are part and parcel of where we're at and why we're here and why we're delaying and continuing to be fearful about the future. We don't trust one another anymore. I want to get back to that. I want to get back to those good conversations that we can have, those good solutions that we can base in that spirit that started in 1984 in this state, different from anywhere else in the United States. I want to get back there. I don't think everyone else at the table wants to get back there.
Thank you, Ray. Jim?
Thank you again. It's an honor to come in front of you guys, and I want to thank the hard work you guys are putting in, and also DNR staff. My name is Jim Peters, Northwest Indian Fish Commission. I represent the Western Washington tribes. We are requesting as a co-manager, along with our other state agency co-managers, to connect up with DNR to look at something that have already been brought forward to get us through this delay. We understand and respect the reason why we might have to do it. We might not like it, but we understand the reasoning behind the delay. But we need to figure out collectively how we are going to be doing business out there. And I understand that we're not, that we have to follow the current rules that are in place. But I think we are able to, as co-managers, be able to clarify what the rule is to protect our salmon habitat. As you guys all know, our salmon resources are declining. And it continues to decline. It's and we just can't afford to lose any more habitat out there. And it's not just for the benefit of the tribal treaty right to harvest fish, but it's that recreational activity of catching fish and the other commercial activities out there for fishing. We need to continue to work together to protect this habitat, and I'm encouraged that we do need to get back to the way we've been working together and rebuild that trust. And I think we're hopeful that at some point in time that it gets there, that we have bits and pieces of that throughout the state, but it's not universal yet, and so we need to really work on that. I'm happy to announce that I'm a grandfather. My middle daughter, 6 months ago, gave birth to twin girls. And they've kind of reinvigorated me and got me some energy to not only lose some weight personally, so that I can be around to help them out and play with them like I did with my three daughters, but also be able to teach them how to fish in our usual and custom areas, like I did with my three daughters. That's one of the things that when we get together, those my three daughters talk about how I taught them how to fish, how I wasn't yelling at them, but my voice got louder when we were out on the boat for safety purposes and things like that. I want to be able to do that for my grandchildren. And so we really need to look into the future here. We do need to restore some of this habitat. We really need to understand where fish are able to go. Although they might not be there right now, my goal is to try to get fish back into those areas. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. Okay. I need to take a break personally. I'm going to suggest, I guess, what is the will of the board? We can start moving into suggesting direction, or we could take an early lunch break. Early lunch, is that what everybody would like to do? And then just so that people know that when we come back from lunch, the facilitator we've hired to work on reinvigorating TFW is here today, and she's got to catch a plane. So after lunch, we will delay our deliberations for a few minutes while she and board member Janicki gives us an update on the board subcommittee and that process. Okay. All right, can we get back here in 45? Will that work?
Yes.
Yes. 12:30, please.